Welcome back to a special edition of the podcast called The Guardian Declares a Jihad on Moscow, Idaho. So The Guardian, which is a big newspaper in the UK that also does a lot of web work in the United States, has run yet another hit job on Christchurch and Moscow, Idaho. So I will put that on the screen for those of you who are in the video version of the podcast. And it's called U.S. Christian Right Group Wages Culture War with Books, Cartoon, and Nature Doc. And so it's written by a guy named Jared Wilson. If you scroll down and click over, what we see is that Jared Wilson has done at least three articles about Moscow just this month in The Guardian. So on November 2nd, make it a Christian town. Make it a Christian town. The ultra-conservative church on the rise in Idaho. On November 10th, Christian group fights Idaho COVID mandates despite pocketing bailouts. And then on the 28th, this piece that I'm talking about today. And before I really get into this, it's important to talk a little bit about newspapers and about The Guardian in particular. So The Guardian is actually a really great newspaper. In fact, I have written articles for The Guardian. I was working in the UK, in London, in 2006, and one of my favorite things to do was just pick up a copy of all the newspapers there and just read them. And The Guardian, along with the Financial Times, had always been one of my favorite newspapers in the entire world. For years, I would tell my editor there, I need to find a way to get the print edition in the United States because I just love reading it. And yes, it is a left-leaning newspaper. There's no doubt about that. But The Guardian has also done a lot of superb journalism over the year. They got a lot of great journalists doing a lot of great things. And as they've gone to the web, though, and especially as they expanded into the United States, they hired a lot of essentially op-ed type people who pumped out just lots and lots and lots of crazy clickbait stuff, which I hate to say it, it's really degraded the brand. I'm kind of sad to see it. And, you know, even the U.S. version, I mean, they've really had some, like, not just clickbaity opinion people, but also some journalists that I think have done some pretty poorly sourced work. But I do think it's important that we distinguish between the clickbait opinion. Certainly we should distinguish between opinion and news, because in newspapers, there is generally separation, particularly the bigger papers, total separation between news and opinion. Now, it is the case that many of the news pieces today are analysis that tend to be very heavy opinion-driven. I'm not saying that people's views don't come into place in the news department, but you can't take a clickbait opinion piece by somebody and use that to judge the news pages of the paper, because they're typically very separate. And even within the news pages, right, you have journalists who really are doing top-quality work at places like The Guardian, like The New York Times, like The Financial Times, like The Wall Street Journal. And I think we need to make a distinction. We shouldn't just say all journalists are trash, etc. There are some really bad journalists out there. There's no denying that. There are a lot of people who are essentially very far-left activists with just bylines, and they're using their position and their platform in the media to try to accomplish political objectives. But we need to make a distinction between them and the more legit people. And that's true. The legit, like really good journalists, generally don't denounce the other people. They're not, you know, policing their own ranks. But they're also, let's be honest, not really in a position to do so. The media profession is in big decline in America. The number of journalists has been declining. And even if they're trust fund people, they don't really need a job, which some of them are, quite a few of them are actually, they still like having a byline in the paper. And if they start, you know, causing trouble, they might find themselves out. So they're in a tough place today. They could get canceled very easily. It's precarious for them. So keep that in mind if you're going to, well, why aren't they calling out the bad journalists? But I just want to make clear that I actually like The Guardian in a lot of ways. I've actually written for it. I think my stories for them are actually pretty solid. And so we can't judge the whole newspaper by this, but it is very clear that the author of this piece, a guy by the name of Jason Wilson, is really out to get the people in Moscow, Idaho, And the journalism he's putting out is just very weak and very bad. You know, before these Guardian pieces came out, there was a piece in Vice that made another attempt to hit them. And all of these pieces are essentially just recapitulations of all the same complaints that have been made against them for a very long time. And by the way, I'm not here to defend everything that Moscow, Idaho has done. You know, I'm not part of that church. You know, you can read it and make your own decisions about it. But it's important to look at this because this shows you how the media operates. And what is the function? I think the more important thing is what is the function of these media hit pieces? And I think this article is particularly instructive in understanding the functions of these pieces. But first, I just want to highlight again, Vice did their piece. Now, immediately on the heels of that, comes The Guardian with this piece. Is there some connection between these two? I don't know that there is, but don't be surprised if, in fact, the authors of those pieces have been in contact with each other and in contact with other people who are activists out there in the world, because we know this has happened. Several years ago, it was discovered that there was a semi-secret email list called JournoList. I believe it was run by Ezra Klein. There was a lot of kind of wonkier left-wing people in the journalism business, and it was exposed that they were out there talking about stories and things and that. Now, there's nothing inherently nefarious about having an email list of journalists. But, you know, I'm just saying, it's very clear, these journalists do talk to each other, and they often do talk to activists, and in some cases, even hackers. They seem to have, you know, pretty tight relationships with hackers. So some hackers will all of a sudden get some data out of some company that they don't like, and all of a sudden they're reporting it in the paper. And just how to get there? What's the actual relationship? Nobody's really interested in digging into that in too much detail. But don't be surprised if the Vice article and the Guardian pieces actually have some connection between each other and have connections with people who are not mentioned in them who have a beef with Moscow, Idaho. So I want to read a couple pieces, a couple excerpts from this article on the Christian right wages culture war with books, cartoons, and Nature Doc. Here it goes. The son of Pastor Douglas Wilson of the controversial Christ Church in Moscow, Idaho, and a close associate have made significant inroads into mainstream culture in America with a successful streaming cartoon based on a book published by the church's own imprint. The Guardian has previously reported on how the church, which aims to create a theocracy in the U.S., has increased its power and influence in its hometown, while also campaigning vociferously against efforts to curb the coronavirus pandemic. Those developments come amid a broader rise in the right wing across the U.S. At the same time, Christ Church is seeking to use television and book publishing to enter U.S. popular culture and promote its interests. Skip ahead a little bit. Nathan Wilson, writing as N.D. Wilson, is the author of a number of best-selling young adult and children's books. Some of these are published with a church-aligned publisher, Canon Press, but most are published with mainstream publishers, including two trilogies and two standalone books with Penguin Random House and one trilogy with Catherine Teggen Books, an imprint of HarperCollins. Wrench, I believe this is Aaron Wrench, who is a member of Christ Church, along with his brother Gabriel, serves as Nathan Wilson's literary agent through his own Leaptide Literary Group. More recently, however, the pair have branched out into mainstream media production. This year saw the fourth season of an animated children's program, Hello Ninja, screened on Netflix. The series is based on a picture book authored by Wilson and published by the children's imprint of the Christ Church-aligned publisher Canon Press. So, we see right away the subtext of this article. And what is that subtext? The subtext is to attempt to toxify the Christ Church community with mainstream media entities so that they will be dropped by mainstream publishers and by Netflix. So this is basically what happens. And we see this all the time. A number of these publications seem to have people whose more or less full-time job is getting people kicked off social media. So you'll often see what they will do. They'll write an article. Have you seen the horrible extremist content on YouTube that these mainstream advertisers are advertising on. And then they call up all the advertisers and ask them, yeah, you know, did you know what you're advertising with? Or they even do this with like cable hosts. They don't like Tucker Carlson will write an article. And so what will they do? The author of this article in a major media publication will make a list of all of Tucker Carlson's advertisers and will call each one of them up and said, hey, I'm so-and-so from this newspaper, and we're writing an article about Tucker Carlson and his extremist views, and we notice you've been an advertiser. We just wanted to verify that you were still an advertiser with Tucker Carlson. And of course, the whole point here is to use the threat of bad press, which these people hate more than anything, basically, as a lever to essentially cause all the advertisers and the platforms to disassociate themselves from people that the reporter doesn't like. So, in the case of Tucker Carlson, that was pretty successful. Pretty much every major advertiser has left them. We also see people like PewDiePie, who lost their media sponsorship and their deals after, papers, I think the Wall Street Journal, well, can't say that for a fact, but I think it was the Wall Street Journal, started reporting about, oh, he made a joke about this, that, or the other thing. And so this is what they do. They come after people who are, in some respect, the competition, in other respects, people they don't like, and they attempt to toxify them with the sources of income that they have. And it's probably the case that the Moscow people do make decent coin from these media deals. And so, hey, how can we cut off their money supply and their credibility supply by making it so none of these people are able to do business with Moscow, Idaho without incurring huge negative press? So it would not surprise me at all if this author himself called Penguin Random House, called HarperCollins, called Netflix for quotes on this article, or if not, that the activist people who do not like, you know, the Moscow folks are also calling these people up to say, hey, have you seen these horrible people that you're doing business with? You've got to disassociate yourself with them. And let's be honest, this tactic has worked in a lot of cases, which, you know, kind of sad to say, but it often does. And this is the playbook that they run. So this is one of the things I'm bringing this up. It's less about Moscow per se than it is about the playbook that they run. They find out that there's a leverage point with an institution that is highly amenable to mainstream media pressure, and then align reporters at these publications, write articles that are designed to sever you from that institutional relationship, which they think is going to harm you, which in many cases, it does. I mean, a lot of people have been left high and dry, for example, after they were fired from conservative publications or think tanks because of the left got mad at them, which frankly shows the profound disloyalty that those people have, and it doesn't reflect well on them. But that's what's going on here. That's one of the things that's going on here. And again, Vice, as sort of a second-tier clickbaity publication, doesn't necessarily have as much cachet. And particularly in the Christian community, I think, you know, the first hit piece in Vice was getting shared by the Christian community, but you run a publication whose very name is Vice, okay? And all of a sudden you're sending that around to pastors. Oh, that doesn't look very good. The fact that these guys are disliked by a publication called Vice, that's probably a positive for them. The Guardian is a blue chip publication in the UK. And again, they do tremendous, legit journalism. And that helps credential them in pieces like this. So these authors, again, a lot of them U.S.-based, can do things like this. The other thing, I just think there's another subtext here, which is the work that the canon people do is actually really, really good. Hello Ninja, I have a young son, so, you know, get the Hello Ninja board book. It's sold in major stores. I'm not going to name major stores that it's been sold in because The Guardian will come after them. But the key is, you know, it's like a legit children's book. It has nothing at all to do with the church or anything Christian, really. It's just basically a mainstream children's book. It's great, and it's doing well. And the show on Netflix, I didn't actually watch the whole show, but I sampled it, and like, wow, this is a very well-done animated series. It's just great, straight-up entertainment. And this sort of thing really, really freaks out people on the left in the mainstream media. When somebody who is conservative starts putting out truly world-class, elite, aesthetic, extremely well done products that are mainstream relevant, then they get shook. I mean, they really get shook. So as long as you've got, for example, the Kendrick brothers, you know, doing their sort of Christian-themed movies, which are well done, but let's be honest, they're kind of hokey in some respects, and they're definitely aimed to that kind of church audience. They're not really mainstream films in a sense. They don't worry about that stuff. They don't care how many copies of the Left Behind books are sold. But when you start doing something that, like, the mainstream wants to see, that's really done at top aesthetic levels, they get freaked out. Another example of that is Mike Cernovich's documentary, Hoaxed. So he actually did a first attempt at a documentary called Silenced, which was about free speech, and it was okay, but not great. And so nobody complained about Silenced, right? He does Hoaxed, which, I mean, is Hollywood-grade documentary. I think it's still available for streaming on a number of platforms, you know, YouTube, maybe, you know, Apple TV. I'm not sure where it's available. If you just go Hoaxed streaming, you can probably find it. But this thing was doing amazingly well on Amazon Prime. And it had a big distributor. Amazon Prime, it was getting huge reviews, huge rating, trending on all the topics. Next thing you know, Amazon bans it inexplicably for no reason whatsoever, even though they went through a mainstream distributor. Why? Because a movie made by a kind of right-wing guy that's extremely well done, that is a threat, right, to the system. And so you can expect that if you do anything world-class, if you do anything that's really top-quality aesthetics, they're going to get freaked out about it. And that's another subtext of this. It's not just trying to cut these guys off from mainstream publishers, mainstream media companies. It's also an example of them being freaked out at the quality levels of what they're doing. Again, I think most people's connection point with the Moscow folks is Doug Wilson's blogging, right? That's the, you know, that's the tentpole thing, you know, and his blogging is not mainstream, right? It's very polarizing. It's more like a conservative red meat blog than, you know, like the New Yorker or something like that. But when you start looking at some of the things that they do in other media things, it's like, it's much more like Hollywood. It's much more like New Yorker. This is like, you know, Hello Ninja is as good as any book that's going to be put out by, you know, one of the big five publishers or however many they're down to now. And so they start looking at that like, whoa, this is freaking us out. And so that's another reason. So they're trying to like, we can't let this get out there. So we have to stop distribution of these high quality materials through mainstream platforms. And so that's sort of this. And, you know, the other reason I wanted to highlight this piece because I wanted to show how the media operates and what it does. The piece is clearly designed in part. They mention these companies by name in association, negative association with the Moscow people in order to get them, you know, a bad publicity incident that hopefully from their perspective gets these companies to disassociate with the Moscow people and force them to rely on their own platforms. That's number one. Number two is they're shook. They're probably shook at the quality of what's been done. Now, do I know what the Nature documentary they're talking about here, how that's going to do? I don't know. That thing, you know, could be good. It could be cringe. We have to see. But I can tell you this, they're capable of putting out something that looks, you know, National Geographic grade. And that's the sort of thing that would really, you know, spook these people. Again, they don't get worried about the Creation Museum. They don't get worried about the Noah's Ark experience. But if you really did some, you know, super Hollywood grade stuff that wasn't cringe, that worries them. And the Moscow people are definitely capable of operating at that level. The other reason I wanted to highlight this piece is because it's just the biggest piece of joke journalism that I have read in a mainstream publication in a very long time. I cannot even believe this made it through the most rudimentary editing. It is that bad. It's an embarrassment. I mean, it is a true embarrassment that The Guardian published this. So I'm just going to read one little paragraph here. They, the Moscow people, have also entered into complicated financial arrangements which appear to divert money to a troubled charity associated with Christchurch and silently taken control of a number of Christchurch-associated businesses through LLCs, which have limited legal and financial reporting obligations. So right there, you immediately see them refer to a troubled nonprofit that they're diverting money to. Now, first, my first thing I thought about that is, you're getting in trouble for diverting. This is supposedly bad that you're diverting money to a nonprofit. Most scandals are when you're diverting money from a nonprofit, right? When people in a nonprofit are somehow engaging in related party transactions that use nonprofit status to benefit or enrich insiders or something of that nature. In this case, like, actually, we're sending for-profit profits to a nonprofit. And what's your point? I mean, the whole point is there. The directionality is just wrong. Secondly, they talk about a troubled charity. Is that what they called it? A troubled charity. But they never actually mention anywhere in the article what that charity is or why it's troubled. I mean, it's truly like mind-boggling to me that you could say they diverted money to a troubled charity and not identify the charity nor substantiate in any way that it's actually troubled. I mean, this is what I mean by this. This piece does not even go through the most minor, rudimentary editing that anyone would do. You're like, what is that? Now, probably what they're referring to is New St. Andrews College, because they do mention New St. Andrews College later in the piece. And apparently Doug Wilson's brother teaches there. And you know, he's going to be involved in this Nature documentary. So that would be my surmise. But they never actually say that's the nonprofit, and they certainly never say anything about it being troubled. So it's kind of weird. This is just like these sorts of pieces that get greenlit, it really reflects very, very poorly on the publication when they don't even do that. The secondly is the way that they're kind of making having an LLC sound nefarious. So they have an LLC, which has limited legal and financial reporting. Everybody uses LLCs. I have an LLC. I mean, is there any business out there in America of any size that isn't using an LLC for something somehow? This is like one of the default forms of business. And then, of course, they talk about the way that they've structured the finances of the movie. I'm like, have you ever looked at like how Hollywood movie finances and legal structures are set up? I mean, it's insane. I mean, you've always read all the stories. Such and such was entitled to a share of the profits, and the movie made $60 billion, and yet they got nothing because the movie technically lost money. You know, I actually did a very brief stint of work as a consultant at a household name television production company. I mean, if I told you the name of this client, you would immediately know it. Everybody in America knows it. And, you know, my boss, the client partner at the time, was talking with the CFO of this company, and he gave my boss a quiz. He says, we're world class at two things. What are they? And, you know, but well, this has got to be a trick question. You think, well, we've got to be world class at TV production, right? That's our core business. But no, this guy says, we're world class at two things, finance and legal. And that's really, in many ways, the secret sauce of these Hollywood-type production companies. They create, what do they create? Probably an LLC for every movie that they create, and it's got all the different partners and all the different things, and, you know, the LLC is probably designed to lose money. And they make money by charging the LLC for distribution and marketing and all this stuff. And so the whole legal financial structures of movies in Hollywood itself is extremely broke, complex. And so whatever these guys are doing with their Nature doc, it actually looks more straightforward than anything I've ever heard about Hollywood. But I just love, again, the way that they try to make having an LLC sound nefarious, as if this isn't just something that everybody does. So again, I just wanted to highlight this because it's very clear that The Guardian, three articles in a month, they've opened some sort of front in the war, comes right after the Vice thing. They seem to be honing in on the media relationships. And, you know, who's involved? I don't know. It'd be interesting to know who's all involved in this. Don't be surprised if some of these reporters and some of these activists have been talking with each other. And, you know, you kind of know a little bit that it's, you know, it's a war and not just legit in reporting, because it's just such low quality journalism and it's full of innuendos and it's just not even good, which is kind of depressing because, again, The Guardian really is capable of doing phenomenal work. And don't hold this totally against the publication based on this or on clickbait. But watch out for the American arm of The Guardian. It's just not as good as the UK branch. But in any cases, just wanted to highlight this, bring it there. I'll throw links to these pieces in the show notes. You can take it out. This is just a little bit of a primer on how the media operates when they want to get somebody, kind of, you know, the things that freak them out, how they operate, and a little bit about this piece of journalism. And again, have a good